Not only that one rickshaw wallah knew where the devotees was, were, the whole town knew. By that time, they were known to everyone by their Harinam activities. It was amazing to see what the devotees were doing, and actually the reception the devotees got. That was the incredible thing, because I had been photographing the devotees on the streets of New York on Harinam, and they weren't very much appreciated. Nobody knew what was really going on. Strange and bizarre, it seemed to everyone. But in Surat, they were greeted like demigods. It was a photographer's dream. The garlands, the flowers, the saris strung from the rooftops, from building to building, the sun coming through colorful, making colorful patterns in the street. So I was basically in ecstasy. But that night when I arrived, Srila Prabhupada, I was taken to meet Srila Prabhupada. It was very, very amazing, because I knocked on the door and Rishi Kumar opened the door. And he was the first person I met in New York on Harinam. And I asked him to do the article. He very graciously accepted me into the temple in New York. So here he was in Surat again. He took me to see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was very interested and gracious, interested in my work, and he went through the magazine. I had done by that time two articles, one for Asia Magazine and one for Earth Magazine. The article in Earth Magazine was not, it was an all right article, but it was, the pages of the magazine were filled with semi-clad people. And Prabhupada, actually, he didn't faze them. He went through each page and looked at everything. Then when he came to the page of the article on Krishna consciousness, he said, "Yes, we must learn to find gold in a dirty place."
You actually had it open to the article, and Prabhupada closed it and then went through it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were there?
Yeah.
Okay. Then Prabhupada made it a very astonishing statement. He asked me if I was going to join. This may have been the next morning. Was it the next morning or that evening? Do you remember?
Something like that, very soon.
He asked me if I was going to become a devotee. And I was very much attracted, but becoming a devotee meant to me to shave the head and wear the robes and live with the members. So I was actually reluctantly, I said, "I don't think so, Srila Prabhupada." And he said, "Then you cannot stay." So I'd come 10,000 miles, and it was very, what to do? So I didn't say anything else, and Srila Prabhupada didn't say anything else, and I stayed. For about 2 months, traveling with the devotees.
I just want to mention at this point that Yadavar was actually so incredible, because for a long time you would never see his face, just because there was always a camera in front of it. And he would be literally hanging from the top of a phone pole or a light pole or hanging onto a balcony, leaning out to get a shot. I mean, he was always in some really unbelievable, you know, position. And the camera was always there.
The next night, Srila Prabhupada hit me with another extraordinary statement, a request, actually. There was a very large engagement, and Prabhupada was gradually asking each devotee to speak. And then he asked me to speak, which completely shocked me. And it must have been a crowd of probably 2,000 people. And I just expressed my appreciation of the culture of India and my appreciation of the people of Surat to welcome the devotees as they did. It was just an extraordinary display of affection and appreciation. And that lasted about 30 seconds, and I sat down. But Srila Prabhupada was truly very, very kind to me. He made me feel welcome. He expressed interest in my work. I would sit there in his room and photograph him. When a visitor would come in, he would introduce me invariably. He'd say, "This is Mr. John. He is from America. He is an expert photographer." Then go on. But I think I felt the Srila Prabhupada's caring mood, especially. And that lasted for 2 months. He tolerated my presence, the noise of the camera, so forth. And that's about it. I took initiation in November of 1971 in Calcutta. So it took me some time to, I didn't go back to finish my thesis right away. I spent 2.5 years in India.
You're still working on it.
Yes. But actually I asked, after the completion of the Hare Krishna People film, I asked Srila Prabhupada whether I should, whether he thought it would be good if I got my degree. And first thing he asked me was, "How long will it take?" And I said, a few months, Srila Prabhupada. And he said, "Then you should get it." So I turned in the Hare Krishna People film, as my thesis, actually, for a master's degree in photography and film. And then wrote maybe a 30-page essay on how I did it, and they accepted that. So everything worked out well in the end.
Vishakha wasn't with you the first time, right?
Vishakha came during the Cross Maidan Festival.
Right. She came. I remember that we knew that Jean was coming, and I remember Jamuna and I were there at Akash Ganga. At this point in time, we were living in Akash Ganga, which was, I don't know, maybe you know the story how we got it, but we were living there on the 7th floor, had an elevator, you know, where somehow we had gotten a nice situation. So the door opened, and she came in. I remember she had Western clothes on at that time, and cameras. And I asked her, "Well, why have you come to India?" And she said, "I have come in a, you know," Vishakha's a very serious person, so she said in her very serious way, "I have come to photograph the essence of India." And in my kind of directly offhand manner, I said, "Well, you sure come to the right place," meaning coming to the devotees. And I remember Jamuna putting tilak on her.
My memories of Cross Maidan were not so much. It was just this huge, huge gathering. I was kind of lost.
I think we were all kind of lost at Cross Maidan.
We were back in Bombay for the Cross Maidan, and so I was put in charge of initial advertising, so I thought, what would attract people to come to a, what would attract their eyes? So first I thought I would make the sign in the form of a rupee. But I thought that's a little bit gross and crass. So what I did is I made a telegram. Because when a telegram comes, everybody pays attention. And I put a picture of Prabhupada with his danda on it and the information. And so, and Madhavisa Maharaj, he was, and Tamal, Samrishindav, everybody had something to do. And Prabhupada liked this idea of pandal programs. So after this very successful program, we also put one on in Delhi and Calcutta, which I'd like to talk about later. But I'd like to continue the story from Delhi.
I wasn't so much always present because my main service was back at the Akash Ganga as Prabhupada's cook and keeping the place clean. But I went every evening. And the pandal was actually activated all day. During the day, they would have devotees there with tables distributing Sri Prabhupada's books and encouraging people to come in the evening. And at this pandal, Sri Prabhupada inaugurated and welcomed a large pair of deities to Bombay. And they were the focus of the pandal. So that was one feature that was outstanding at the pandal. And then he arranged, there was a young couple. The lady was from Australia, and the husband, or the, at that point they were boyfriend and girlfriend, was from Sweden. But they joined in Bombay, and Prabhupada was going to marry them at the pandal program, because he wanted to show by a practical example how the Westerners were actually willing to embrace this culture and this philosophy and to actually live it. So Vegavan and Padmavati, Jorgen became Vegavan, and I don't remember Padmavati's name, but Padmavati became her initiated name. They were married by his divine grace in front of the deities at this pandal program. And they are still, to this day, a united married couple serving Sri the Prabhupada. He is one of ISKCON's initiating gurus, one of the few Grihastha gurus in the movement. And they are stationed today in Sweden. Early on, after that time, though they actually helped Sri the Prabhupada and assisted him in developing the preaching in Australia. So that was one of the significant events. But, of course, I think all of you know of another more significant event, at least for all of your lives, that occurred at the pandal program. And that was one particular young American who was traveling India, searching for the absolute truth. And that person came to the pandal program. As you all know, His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. So that was one major seed that fructified as a result of the pandal program by Srila Prabhupada's grace and mercy.
Actually, there's a film of that wedding that you just described. And maybe 4 or 5 months ago, I was studying that film, thinking that His Holiness Radhanath Swami might be in that, somewhere in that Cross Maidan film. And it turned out he was in a few frames of that wedding film. Yes.
Really?
Yes. In fact, he and I sat and looked at that. And he looked at it, Maharaj looked at it for maybe 30 seconds. And he turned to me and said, "Yes, that is 100% me. 110% me."
Do you have that with you?
Yeah,
long hair. Long matted hair.
Is that all right, Mara? If I divulge that information.
Everyone knows the story.
they would have seen eventually anyway.
Gurudas tried to prevent him from taking the prasadam.
Yeah, but
for good reason.
At least I offered an alternative. It was like he was waiting, hadn't eaten for 2 days, and he was waiting in the line for 2 hours, and then when he finally got the steaming hot halva, I took it and said it's made with motor oil, dalda, but I at least took him as an alternative and fed him other prasadam. I didn't just take it.
No, you actually saved his life.
He saved my life, too. So, I can go back to Delhi?
You
sure? I mean, so here we were in Delhi in this, in these little cell-like rooms in on a Delhi Gate, and we were going to various engagements, and it was like some of the ones in London where we would outnumber the audience, and it was slowly, slowly going. And then Prabhupada wrote me a letter that there's a palace near where I used to live at Keshi Ghat that the Maharaj of Bharatpur has, and we might be able to get this, so go get this palace. Well, I was in ecstasy because I was waiting for the chance to go to Vrindavan since I came to India. And I was sent alone. And so when I arrived in Vrindavan, I had one name that Srila Prabhupada gave me, and I met the gentleman, and we had arranged to meet the next day. He was going to try to take me to the Maharaj of Bharatpur and this palace. But in the meantime, I had no place to stay, so I actually went to Shamama, this woman that was mentioned, Mataji Shamama, that we still had some, at that time, we still were friends. And so she had a place in Ramanreti. And there was a Gaushala, and she gave me a room right on the road to Vrindavan, and it happened to be a full moon night, Purnima. And across the fields I heard the holy name all night, and I heard peacocks calling. I was in such ecstasy, I couldn't sleep at all. I heard bullock carts on the road, and I looked out the window, and there's a man not driving the cart, but lying in the back of it, singing bhajans to the full moon. I felt, this is ecstasy to be here. The next day, Shamamad, one of the brahmacharis, took me on the parikrama path to the place where Krishna pulled water from the well. Every step, I actually swooned on the parikrama path. Every step reminded me of Krishna. Every place was something about Krishna Leela. After the parikrama, I had to regain my composure and meet this man, Radharaman, who took me to the palace, Lakshmi Rani Kunj, right on the Jamuna River. There was doors as tall as this pandal, wooden. We knocked on the door. They opened up. A sleepy-eyed pujari opened the door. I saw the altar, the pravan the place where the altar was. It was seemingly run down. There were three floors of rooms, but they were empty. They were full of bats and bat guano. There was a garden where the king used to walk, but it was also not taken care of. The sandstone windows opened up onto the Jamuna River, though, and that was glorious, and there's a balcony there. Prabhupada wanted this palace, so this pujari, through the translation of Radharaman, said that the Maharaj of Bharatpur is not here. He's in Bharatpur. And so I didn't know what to do. across the street from the Lakshmi Rani Kunj was a school. And there was a king and statesman who ran the school, and his headmaster was a gentleman who spoke English, and he looked very nice. And he said, I can arrange for you to go to Bharatpur the next day and meet, because I'm also familiar with the Maharaj of Bharatpur, and I can arrange. The king, statesman, was out of station, but I saw pictures of him with Subhas Chandra Ghosh and Lenin. He was a world traveler, and his headmaster was making it possible to go and meet the Maharaj of Bharatpur. So we went to Bharatpur, this headmaster and I. The Maharaj of Bharatpur was back in Delhi. So I returned to Delhi, reluctantly, not wanting to leave Vrindavan, and Jamuna and I went to meet this Maharaj of Bharatpur. And so we went to a very nice, big, sprawling, suburban house on Malcha Marg, and this Maharaj of Bharatpur says to me, do you know the head of the Peace Corps? He ran away with my wife. I could see that this man was a little chanchala. He was a little, his mind was all over the place. But we cultivated him. He had ulterior motives. He wanted money because just recently all the Maharajas were dethroned by this act of Congress. I forget what it's called now, but the Maharajas could only own so much land and have so much money. Privy purse, they got a privy purse. But Prabhupada told me that this would not have happened in ancient days when Maharajas had to kill a tiger before they were inaugurated, not with guns, but by handmade weapons. Prabhupada laughed that they would be able to be dethroned so easily. I met the Maharaj of Dongadra, who was the Concord of Princes, who was the lobbyist for the Maharajas. So this Maharaj of Bharatpur, because he was dethroned, saw that we were Westerners, that we might have a lot of money, and so his idea was that we would pay for the Lakshmi Rani Kunj Palace. Well, at that time, we had our first pilgrimage. Devotees from the West were coming to Vrindavan, so this is where we stayed, in the Lakshmi Rani Kunj, even though it was run down. At that point, the Maharaj of Bharatpur from Delhi had sent a julan, a swing made out of silver and gold, which he was giving us for only 60,000 rupees. Achyutananda Maharaj got angry and said, no, we will not accept it, and he sent it back. I thought we should just accept it, but not pay him, you know, just at least not blatantly sent it back. The Maharaj of Bharatpur, because, you know, when someone gives you a gift, it's an insult not to accept it, even though he wanted money for it. So I thought, this is a mistake. Well, sure enough, the Maharaj of Bharatpur got so angry, he tried to tear up his life membership card. However, it was laminated in plastic, so he couldn't tear it. So he cut it in four pieces and sent it back on the same conveyance that the julian was there. It was like on the front seat, the life membership card. So I was right. Now, we didn't have faxes in those days and emails. So I wrote Prabhupada about this, and Prabhupada wrote back, try to cultivate this king because this palace is a place for us to stay. And but we don't want to pay anything, but he can stay in it as a life member. We will fix it up, and he can come there anytime he wants as a guest. Well, the Maharaja of Bharatpur really wanted... He said, there's 33 hectares of land in Govardhan, another palace, some deities, and this Lakshmi Rani Kunj, which we could have for 3 lakhs of rupees, which actually was a pretty good deal if you paid on time. I thought if we paid it on time, this might be all right. So I wrote Prabhupada, and things were crossing in the mail, but Prabhupada's basic ideas, he is king, we are Brahmins, he should give it to us. Well, because we were cultivating the Maharaj of Bharatpur, we went to his house in Govardhan. There were servants with fans that went all the way across the room. There were silver plates and nice prasadam. And he had a little son who was 10 years old. And he was still friendly then, but he took us to a wedding. And he sat right behind the married couple, and he was joking during the whole wedding. I saw that this man is a little bit unstable. Then he said, I own a lot of Govardhan. I want you to go around Govardhan Hill with me. So we went on the parikrama around Govardhan. He was a jot. He wanted to teach me to tie my dhoti like the jots, one leg for sword fighting. I'm talking to the Maharaj of Bharatpur, and suddenly he's not there. I'm walking regular. He's walking step by step, so I go back. He said, kings do not walk like ordinary men. They stride like elephants. It took us 3 days to get around Govardhan Hill. He had an entourage of 2 queens. One was all in white makeup, like a no play in Japan, but she was very nice. He had a small army. He had incense, big, long, thick incense. He had a doctor. He had pearl japa beads. Now, his rule was when he was chanting, he wouldn't talk. He had a man who dispensed money. That was his only job. We get to one temple on the hill, and the pujari there, for an upcoming festival, Gaupuja, asked the Maharaj for some donation for this while the Maharaj was chanting on his japa beads. He wouldn't speak. He goes to his money man like this. The money man gives the pujari 100 rupees. When the Maharaj got finished chanting, he got furious. He stuck his tongue, stuck his chin out and said, I wanted to give him 1 rupee, not 100. His army, his little army, took this pujari and dragged him away with his feet dragging in the sand. His little son, who was had an English accent, said, Daddy, why did you do that? He said, I didn't like him. He was the king. So I thought, now this person is going to be hard to deal with, but Jamuna and I were cultivating him. But as it worked out, this Lakshmi Rani Kunj Palace would not be big enough for the expansion of our movement. So there's another story. I want to let the others talk, but there's a reunion of Shyamasundara and myself in Delhi with Srila Prabhupada to go to Vrindavan, where Prabhupada became the ringmaster. I will tell the story of Prabhupada is like the ringmaster of a circus. So, you sure? Well, okay. Here, so we were meeting in Delhi, and I was so happy to see my friend of so many years, Shyamasundara Prabhu, again. And we were like little school children, whispering in the back of the car, catching up. And Prabhupada was there, and he was sitting gravely, not speaking, in the front of the car, not speaking. And I'm thinking, we're going to go to Vrindavan. This is the highest ecstasy, transcendental pleasure, I've written it, transcendental pleasure that you could plan. Vrindavan and your spiritual master together? So I'm waiting for some great shloka that Prabhupada was going to speak to emulate what it's like to go to Vrindavan. Prabhupada wasn't saying anything. Suddenly a motorcycle gang comes up besides the car and surrounds the car. Prabhupada goes, Hare Krishna. And they go, Hare Krishna, and they escorted us down the road. Prabhupada's still silent. He's clearing his throat. I could tell when he was about to speak. His honey, gravelly voice was about to enhance us with a great shloka. Prabhupada clears his voice and says, Cement! We must get cement and build a water tower like that. So we get to Vrindavan, to Mr. Saraf's house, who was now wanting to donate the piece of land in Ramanreti. But now, instead of being our friend, Mataji Shamadevi wanted the same piece of land because it was near her place, and suddenly she was our enemy. She wanted the same piece of land. So by this time, we were joined. Prabhupada said we could live at the Radha Damodar temple in his rooms. And I had to arrange this through Madan Mohan Goswami and Guru Chand Goswami, who lived across the way. Prabhupada had arranged to have these rooms for life, but they also were litigating against that. That's another story. So, but we could stay in the upstairs portion of Radha Damodar. So Jamuna came, and also the Shiradakshaya Vishnu, who's now in Vrindavan, 77 years old, with his own ashram. He was a businessman from London who retired and served Prabhupada. So he was there. So he was designated to pick this piece of paper. One said yes, that we could get the land, and one said no, and it was at the feet of Radharani. So he picked the yes. So now Mr. Sharaf was going to donate the land. Meanwhile, we're there. Shyamasundara's with me. And Prabhupada was in one room. Shyamasundara had the typewriter. He was typing documents for the transfer of land. Shyamadevi came in with a member of parliament to contest it. Madan Mohan Goswami came in, who was right across the courtyard from Guru Chand Goswami, but they hadn't spoken for 10 years. So Prabhupada says, you put him in one room, you put him in another, you put Shyamadevi and the MP in another, and who shows up but Krishnadas Babaji, Prabhupada's godbrother, who without advertisement all he did was chant and laugh ever since I knew him, a great Baba. Every time Prabhupada came, he lived mostly in Barsana, in places out of Vrindavan. But every time Prabhupada came, somehow or other he'd know. And he showed up, so they were happy to see each other. So give him another room, make him comfortable. So Shamashind and I are running from room to room, and Prabhupada, as I say, was like a ringmaster. The deed is being typed by Shamashinda. At the same time, another document to arrange for the Radha Damodar rooms was being typed. Prabhupada had to placate him, Madan Mohan and Gurachand. He was like a lion in one room, a clown in another, a trapeze artist in another. He was like the ringmaster, calming everyone. And by the end of the day, the land was ours. Everything was calm. And I was happy to be with my Guru Maharaj in Vrindavan.
Let's see. Wow, we were out there in Vrindavan. It takes a while to get back.
Yeah.
Bombay. Okay, we're still back in Bombay. The Cross Maidan was in March, wasn't it?
March 71.
Okay. Prabhupada is there. By this time, we had secured the Akashganga building on in Bombay, and Prabhupada liked that room very much, his room in Akashganga, because the breezes blew right off of the Arabian Sea. He was filled with triumph after the Cross Maidan program, and I can remember him just laying against his bolster in his room in Akashganga, just glowing with pride that he had finished this fantastic program in Bombay, and the people of Bombay were gloriously receiving him. He was so happy in Bombay. And the other couple of other things I remember about that period was at some point I had mentioned to him that I had studied philosophy in college. I had majored and got my degree in Western philosophy. And one morning he came in, and we started talking philosophy, and he took the aspect of the guru and Krishna consciousness, and I took the aspect of the Western philosopher and started arguing with him. And he's after our discussion like that, he said, how much philosophy do you know? All of the philosophers of the West. And I said, well, I can get a book. I can review their philosophies. Yes, I can explain Western philosophy. He said, then you will come every morning, and you will be the philosopher, and I will argue against you. So I got a book on the summaries of Western philosophers, Plato, starting with Plato, Aristotle, right up to the modern existentialists. And that began a series of discussions that went on every day for about a year, maybe 2 years. He would make me be there at 8 o'clock every morning to be the philosopher for the day. And he would argue against that philosophy. Every kind of question you can possibly imagine was asked and debated during those discussions. Prabhupada answered everything perfectly. They were printed in a book called Dialectic Materialism, I believe, later, which is long out of print. But if someone has a sincere desire to study the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in its purest form, that book, there's no question that is left unanswered by Prabhupada from those discussions. Those that were initiated in Bombay during that period. Another thing I remember about that is Prabhupada's interaction with Saraswati up in Akash Ganga. She became his little friend there in such a delightful way that he expected her to be in his room every morning. After the walk, he would come back and sit in his room and Saraswati would come in. If she didn't show up, he would send out someone to ask, "Where is Saraswati? I haven't seen her today yet." And sometimes I would come in the room and little Saraswati would be sitting there, and she's only 3. About 3 years old at this time. And she's just sitting there with Prabhupada, and they're just talking. And who knows how long they've been talking together. But they became special friends during that period. And then for me, the most incredible episode during that period when Prabhupada was in Akash Ganga was the arrival of Hansa Duda and Prabhupada asking him, "Have you got my visa yet for Russia, for Moscow?" Prabhupada had wanted to go behind the Iron Curtain for many years, and he had been requesting first a devotee named Krishnadas in San Francisco to try to get him a visa to go to Russia. And Krishnadas had been trying for years. Then he gave the job to Hansa Duda. Hansa Duda had been trying for years. No one could get a visa yet for Prabhupada to travel there. So he looked at me and asked me if I thought I could get a visa for him to Russia. And I said, "Well, I'll try." And he gave me his passport. And I went to the Russian consulate in Bombay, and by some hook or by crook, I got the visa. And the visa was good for 5 days as a tourist visa, and we had to go by organized tour, government-sponsored organized tour, and we could only go for 5 days. And this visa allowed his two attendants, American attendants, to travel with him. This was very unique in those days. This was the very height of the Cold War, the Brezhnev era, when America and Russia were at each other's throats, ready to drop the hydrogen bomb on each other, 1971. The most tense time in world politics. And somehow or other, Krishna gave Prabhupada this visa. So that happened in Bombay as well. And as a result of that, Prabhupada asked me then to join him as his secretary and go with him to Russia. That's a separate story, but many things happen in Bombay. Magic things always happen in Bombay. I don't remember lots of little details, but
one thing. Kartikeya Mahadevi was walking with Prabhupada on the beach, and he said, "I am not afraid of death, but I am afraid for my family." And Prabhupada said, "Then you are still not understanding death."
I'd like to ask my good wife, Vishakha Prabhu, as Srila Prabhupada addressed her, to come up and speak something about her first meeting with Srila Prabhupada.
You're the only one who could get her up there.
Maybe you could. Any other story? One story about Prabhupada going to Russia, just a very quick incident. That one devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada, begging him to stay in Bombay, saying it's cold in Russia and. Specifically, there's the mango season in Bombay is now come. So please don't go to Russia, he was requesting Prabhupada. Prabhupada's answer was that the preaching in the snows of Russia is sweeter than any mango. Srila Prabhupada, also when we came to meet him in Akashganga, as Yashak will relate, we had an idea to do a photo essay, being photographers. And Srila Prabhupada suggested one place that we should go, and Yashak will tell you about that.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamiti Namane. Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharane, Nirvase Sasanyavadi, Paskya Tadeshatane. Thank you very much for inviting me here. I wanted to mention that, just briefly, that to come into the presence of this atmosphere is very humbling, because there is such an atmosphere of subservience and humility that it makes it very prominent in my mind how much of that is missing in my own life. And at the same time, it's bewildering, because I should be serving you and learning from you this mood of subservience and humility and respect and honor. And yet somehow or other, I'm the recipient of those things. So everything is a bit topsy-turvy. It's bewildering. So it's a strange combination. But I met John Greiser, who is now Yadavara, in college. And when he decided to do his master's thesis on the Hare Krishna people, he went to India. That was in the fall of 1970. And then I got these letters from India, how he went to the Kumbh Mela, and there was this grand tent-like affair, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and how he experienced the devotees there and in Surat, as you've heard. And so I was very intrigued by all this. I was trying at the time to go to Cuba to do some photography in Cuba, or photography, as you say. But I couldn't get permission from the government. So finally, when John wrote me and said, why don't you join me in India? I thought, why not? So I happened to go on the same airline, Bosco Airlines.
It actually has, that wasn't the last flight.
That plane that we... That plane was its last flight.
And they still left from Brussels. So I flew, I had a very cheap flight from New York to London, and I spent one night in the Bari Place Temple that you heard so much about. And that was, by then it was winter. It must have been January, February. And I got permission to stay in the temple, but because I was a guest, I had to stay on the outer periphery of the women, and they slept close to the heater. And, of course, the farther you get from the heater, the colder it got, so I froze. I just totally froze in that night. And the next day I went out and I bought a down sleeping bag that was fit for sub-zero weather and took that to India, so you can imagine how useful that was. So, and I arrived in Bombay after an experience of severe diarrhea in Brussels. I was very weak and bewildered. And John somehow met me at the airport. And there we were, and I had the distinct impression, although I was a hardcore atheist, when I arrived in India and sat down for the first time on the bus, I had a distinct impression that I'd been here before, although I had never left America except to go to Canada ever before. At the same time, I was rather uncomfortable because everyone stared at me. If you had white skin, wherever you went, there are all these eyes, dark eyes, looking at you, which I wasn't at all used to. So at first we went to the Sea Palace Hotel. We were put up there very kindly by Mr. Chobria. And from there we went to Akashganga to visit the devotees. And it happened that since John had more or less finished a lot of his work, he started helping the devotees in the kitchen, making prasadam, or just rolling puris. He wasn't cooking. So somehow I was in the kitchen also watching him, and there was a very elegant Indian man, I don't know his name, elderly man, in impeccable saffron cloth, who was cooking the puris while John was rolling. And I was just standing by some very large windows observing this scene. And in through the doors walks another elderly Indian gentleman, also in saffron robes. And he had a distinct uniqueness about him, what I would call an unpretentious dignity, a regal character. Now, within a moment, he took in the entire situation in the kitchen. He looked at me, he saw me, and he didn't say anything. Later, I learned that only people who are dressed in devotional attire should be in the kitchen. I had Western attire, and only devotees should be in the kitchen, and I was totally a newcomer. But he didn't say anything. And that was my first look at His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And I actually respected him very much for not enforcing those rules, because I was so new, it would have been a further bewilderment to me. Why are you here? You don't have a sari, and so forth. So after that, sometime after that, the pandal happened. And since I was into photography, I would wander around the streets of Bombay, and everywhere I would see these huge signs, you know, that go across the streets, on the sides of buildings, posters. Some of them had huge pictures of Srila Prabhupada announcing Cross Maidan with the dates, you know, the American devotees are there, come. So I thought this was normal. I didn't realize that this was something that was just had occurred by the arrangement of Shyamasundara Prabhu and Madhavisa. I thought this was what happened in Bombay. You walk down the streets and you see this huge advertisement. So the pandal occurred, and there was, you know, 10,000, 20,000 people there in the audience, and all of them except for Radhanath Maharaj were Indians. And on the stage, everyone was Western except for Srila Prabhupada. So I didn't feel quite at home being amongst the audience, it didn't seem, because I was also Western. So I sat on the stage, and by that time they had wrapped me up in a sari, which I also, I couldn't understand at all how saris worked. It reminded me of a verse from the Bhagavad Gita: there is no beginning, there is no middle, there is no end to all this. And I had trouble with Prabhupada's accent. And I also had trouble when I finally was able to understand a little. At one point, he talked about Prahlad Maharaj receiving instructions within the womb of his mother. And I thought, how bizarre can this be, that there's a fetus receiving transcendental knowledge? This is just inconceivable. So after the pandal ended, Srila Prabhupada was going to do some traveling. And John and I decided that we would like to do a story, a photographic story, similar to the stories that are done in National Geographic, which is a famous magazine with many picture articles. And we would like to do this story on a quaint Indian village to show how people live naturally, the agrarian lifestyle, no modern machinery or modern technology. But there are thousands and thousands and thousands of villages in India, and we were new to the country. We have no idea where to go. So we thought, well, let us ask Srila Prabhupada. He knows India very well. He can give us good advice. So we went to Prabhupada's room. He was talking with somebody, and he stopped, and we said, this is our plan. Where do you advise us to go? And he looked at us and said, you do not speak the language. Wherever you go, they will simply steal your cameras and cheat you. So we were we were crestfallen. And then he paused, and he said, best you go to Vrindavan. You do your photographic story in Vrindavan. So we didn't go there right away. We had an excursion to Nepal. We went trekking in Nepal. And then sometime in June or July, we went to Vrindavan. And that, for me, was a transforming event in my life. Prabhupada sent us there, so the potency of fulfilling his instruction was there, and the potency of Vrindavan, the piety of the people, and the worship in the temples. It actually changed my heart. So I am eternally indebted to Srila Prabhupada for that initial instruction and all the instructions that followed, and also for being here amongst your glorious association and seeing how wonderfully you have heard from your spiritual master and how you are absorbing that knowledge and applying it daily from moment to moment in your lives. Hare Krishna.
So one, just one addition to that, we spent a month there in Vrindavan, and then just to, as an agent of Srila Prabhupada and Lord Krishna, Gurudas Prabhu asked us to come to Calcutta to do to print the first Vyasa Puja book in India for Srila Prabhupada. And Vishakha, by that time, was so attached to Vrindavan that she didn't want to leave. But somehow or other, I convinced her to leave. So leaving Vrindavan just before Janmashtami was for her a great sacrifice. So that increased her feelings of separation. So you also helped in that regard.